good evening to you again. It's good to have been with you today. It's a privilege and a blessing to worship with you, to renew acquaintances and to make new acquaintances. Thank you for your hospitality, and I pray God's blessing on each of you as you continue to serve him. In the Italian city of Pisa, a bell tower rises over 180 feet above the Piazza dei Miracoli. It's crafted from beautiful white marble, and it's encircled by 8 tiers of intricately arched open arcades. It was constructed between the 12th and 14th century to house the bells of the Pisa Cathedral. But from the earliest stages of the construction, the tower began to sink into the soft ground beneath it, and it slowly began to tilt out of vertical plumb. At the worst of its tilt, it was 5.5 degrees, or 15 feet, out of plumb from top to bottom. And over the centuries, engineers tried one fix after another fix, and only ended up adding more weight to the uneven structure or disturbed the soil further, until the Tower of Pisa became one of the most famous architectural structures in the world, not because of its design, but because of its distinctive lean. Now, to be clear, the engineers of Pisa did not set out to build a leaning tower. In fact, I remember seeing an advertisement in a local business magazine many years ago, and it said it would just be the Tower of Pisa if someone had called Morgan Keller. The Tower of Pisa became a slow-motion architectural disaster caused by a series of miscalculations, stubborn persistence, and seemingly minor decisions that span nearly 2 centuries. The engineers cut the stone, they stacked the marble, they followed the plans with the same confidence that every builder has. What we are building will stand straight. No builder lays a foundation thinking, I'm building a disaster. One of Satan's favorite targets today is our youth and our young people, and I consider myself to still be on the younger half of the crowd here, contrary to what the mirror tells me. And so I feel this personally. I still feel like the devil is targeting me as a young person. The devil does not target us with one dramatic blow, which suddenly one day takes our spiritual footing away and causes us to fall. But he often lets the ground under us soften. He allows our foundation to shrink. He hides the early warning signs and causes them to fade from our minds. And as young people, we tend to make choices one by one that seem small and harmless and even unrelated, but each one can nudge our spiritual life a little farther off center. So the Leaning Tower of Pisa, as it is known today, is a warning to each of us for the potential of choices to set us off course. And the call tonight, I believe, from our Heavenly Father is to check the direction of our lives and make sure that the small choices are not causing a tilt that will become our identity. The title of the message tonight is Little Choices, Big Implications, and the burden is to strengthen our awareness of the eternal consequences of even our small daily choices and inspire each of us, especially our youth, to choose life. I invite you to Deuteronomy 30. I thought after I had these 3 messages prepared and printed out, I believe Elm Street's going to think Deuteronomy is my favorite book of the Bible. Well, I sort of went where the Lord led me, and I ended up in Deuteronomy to introduce all 3 messages. Tonight I'd like to read the first 20 verses, I guess it's all the verses, of chapter 30. These are the words of an aged Moses. A Moses who seems to have a burden. He's burdened with a message from the Lord for God's people. And he becomes progressively earnest and progressively emphatic. And you'll notice a procession of very black and white terms through this chapter. Terms like good and evil, life and death, blessing and cursing. Deuteronomy 30, "And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon thee, the blessing and the curse which I have set before thee, and thou shalt call them to mind among all the nations whither the Lord thy God hath driven thee, and shalt return unto the Lord thy God, and shalt obey his voice according to all that I command thee this day, thou and thy children, with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that then the Lord thy God will turn thy captivity, and have compassion upon thee, and will return and gather thee from all the nations whither the Lord thy God hath scattered thee. If any of thine be driven out into the uttermost part of heaven, from thence will the Lord thy God gather thee, and from thence will he fetch thee. And the Lord thy God will bring thee into the land which thy fathers possessed, and thou shalt possess it, and he will do thee good, and multiply thee above thy fathers. And the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart, and the heart of thy seed, to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. And the Lord thy God will put all these curses upon thine enemies, and on them that hate thee, which persecuted thee. And thou shalt return and obey the voice of the Lord, and do all his commandments which I command thee this day. And the Lord thy God will make thee plenteous in every work of thine hand, in the fruit of thy body, and in the fruit of thy cattle, and in the fruit of thy land for good. For the Lord will again rejoice over thee for good, as he rejoiced over thy fathers. If thou shalt hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes which are written in this book of the law, and if thou turn unto the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul, for this commandment which I command thee this day is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldest say, Who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldest say, Who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it? But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it." And the rest of this chapter, I believe, is the climax. Pay particular attention to verses 15 through 19. "See, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, and his statutes, and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply, and the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But if thine heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shalt be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish, and that ye shall not prolong your days upon the land whither thou goest, whither thou passest over Jordan to possess it. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them." Moses' burden from the Lord climaxes in verse 19. "I've set before you two choices. I've set before you the choice of life and the choice of death." He didn't say, "I've set before you a whole color wheel." He didn't say, "I've set before you 256 shades of gray." "I've set before you death and life." Two distinct and disparate ends. Two ends of life that are diametrically opposed to each other. And if the finality of the destination is so stark, then the journey to get there is extremely serious. It is impossible that these two moral courses should share the same roadway. In geometry, when you have a straight line, it's impossible to head in opposite directions on a straight line and ever meet up again. Moses is saying, if your destination matters, if you have the destination picked, then choose the life that will get you there. The first part of the message, why do little choices have big implications? First, choices are directional. They set the direction in which we are traveling. There were two decisions that set the course of the Tower of Pisa and made it the Leaning Tower of Pisa. One was the architects chose a site on a plain between two rivers where the soil was incredibly soft. It was actually a compressible mixture of clay and fine sand and shells. And they chose there to build this tower. And ironically, most historians believe that the word Pisa itself derived from a Greek word meaning marshy. As you have to think, hello. The second mistake was that the original architect made a very critical miscalculation on the foundation. For this 180-foot plus bell tower that weighed 14,000 tons, he laid a foundation only 10 feet deep. It simply was not deep enough or wide enough to distribute the weight of the tower. And you see, those two choices were directional. They set the course that that tower was going to experience. Choices set a trajectory that we cannot see at first. We see this in verse 15 and 16. I've set before you these two choices, and it's framing these choices to obey God or disobey God as not some personal preference or inconsequential chocolate versus vanilla choice, but it's a decisive fork in the road of life that makes a big difference on the trajectory of our future. And sometimes as youth and even as older people, we're tempted to settle into an environment that's not stable. We settle into a peer environment that maybe mocks conviction, mocks spirituality, or we start to feed on a digital diet that compromises our values. That's a directional decision, and it will set us on a trajectory for life. And often what happens at the same time is, as we're choosing these compromising foundations, we're neglecting our spiritual lives. The tendency is that we don't build a deep personal walk with God. Our prayer and our scripture reading and tuning our life and the walk of repentance is shallow or sporadic. And that's setting a trajectory. And we may not feel unsteady at first as we make those little choices, but we're already on a drifting course. We're already setting a trajectory. Colossians 2 verse 7 calls us to be rooted and built up in him. Pay attention to the foundation and be established in the faith, to not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, as Psalm 1 says. You see, those small choices are directional, and so they're not really so small. Early choices about the environment that we place ourselves in and the foundation that we establish very quietly determine the trajectory of our life long before anyone else notices. Choices are directional. Secondly, choices are formative. In 1272, Giovanni de Simone decided he was going to fix this Leaning Tower. And his choice to fix it was, well, if the tower's leaning, I'll just build the next several floors to be wider, to be taller on the side to which it's leaning so that it straightens this thing up. Well, not only did he add extra weight on the side that was already leaning, but he actually permanently altered the tower's shape. So what was supposed to be this upright cylinder turned into sort of a curved banana shape because he distorted the overall structure. You see, choices don't just affect our behavior, they form our character. Verse 6 of Deuteronomy 30, God promises that if Israel will turn back to him, he will fix the deformation of their character. He said, I will circumcise your heart so that you can love me again with all your heart and with all your soul. And he's promising to fix a choice in their behavior that had reformed their inner character, their inner spiritual identity. Sometimes we face this as youth and even as adults. But when we find ourselves having made poor choices, and maybe we realize that we're on a trajectory that isn't wise, we're tempted to, instead of opening up about those struggles and confessing our failures, we're tempted to cover it up or try to compensate for it in a way that makes it appear that we're spiritually okay. We try to warp the next part of our life to compensate. We're tempted to create a double life where we're pious in public and very conflicted in private. And you know, hypocrisy doesn't just add to the weight of our sin, it actually warps our character. He that covereth his sin shall not prosper, Proverbs 28:13. Change is formative, because some decisions change who we are, not just what we do. Thirdly, choices are cumulative. By the time the builders went to add the third story to the Tower of Pisa in 1178, the tower already was tilting noticeably. And at that point, they should have stopped and torn it down and reaped. And started from fresh. But instead of doing that, they decided to simply keep on building. And so they built it. And when they were finished, they added 7 massive bells, one for each note of the major scale, to the top of the tower. Wasn't that why it was built, to be a bell tower? So they added these 7 massive bells, which added another 8,000 pounds to the overall structure of the tower. You see, each architect was building on the previous error, and the cumulative load of the continued building pushed the tower to the edge of collapse. And so the Leaning Tower of Pisa is actually a monument to the compounding effect of choices. Small choices compound into massive outcomes. The chapters leading up to Deuteronomy 30, Deuteronomy 27 through 29, are a long list of blessings and curses that God pronounced on sustained disobedience or sustained obedience. And chapter 30 is bringing it all together and sort of showing how these patterns will play out. Verses 1 and 2, it says, you know, if you do the things that I've said in these previous chapters, you're going to either get the blessing that I've described or the curse that I've described. This chapter is bringing it together. And so the choice that Moses is calling them to in verse 19 is not a once and done or once in a lifetime choice. Sometimes we zero in on those verses out of the context and we sort of get the impression that he's bringing them to a crisis point, and it's either you make this decision and it's all or none. He's actually, I believe, showing the culmination of a lifetime of decisions that accumulate, a decision that has an effect, and the next decision follows and it adds to the effect, and it accumulates. You know, we tend as humans to ignore the first warnings from our conscience and keep going the direction that we've decided to go. We tend to keep building on those compromised decisions, just like the builders of the Tower of Pisa kept building on the inadequate foundation. We may tell ourselves, you know, everybody does it. It's not a big deal, and we keep on going. And soon, if we ignore the little deviations, the little choices, we're soon faced with heavier temptations, and we're faced with burdens that we don't have the spiritual or the emotional maturity to handle. And as young people, sometimes we get wrapped up into premature relationships that we don't have the foundation to handle. We can get wrapped up in addictions, wrapped up by the lure of the freedom of the world that's out there. And all of that weight just adds to the instability that we've already started. When our mind and our spirit's already struggling to find our way and find our place, that added weight just accelerates our drift. Enter not into the path of the wicked. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away, Proverbs 4. The first obvious tilt is not just a warning. It's actually a mirror of what's in our heart, and we should sit up and pay attention. Because small compromises stacked one on top of another eventually create a life that cannot stand upright. It is rare that someone wakes up one morning and decides, I'm going to rob a bank today. There is a whole series of decisions that lead to that point. And it is very rare that a Christian collapses spectacularly without there being a whole stack of decisions, small decisions that led to that point. Choices are cumulative. Fourthly, choices are consequential. By 1838, the Tower of Pisa had sunk so far into the ground that its base was underground, and the base had been intricately carved for the pleasure of people who visited the tower. And now it's underground, and the one architect decided that this was a shame that this carved, beautifully carved base was underground, and he decided to expose this base so that it could be viewed. And so he went around the base and he dug a trench the whole way around the base so that they could see how it was carved. Well, the problem was that that disturbed the already high water table. The trench filled with water, the soil liquefied, and undermined the tower's foundation even farther, and suddenly the tower lurched another several inches out of plumb. And that's when it came most dangerously close to collapse. Choices are consequential because choices send ripples into places that we never intended to be disturbed. When Moses says in verse 19, choose life that both thou and thy seed may live, he's talking about ripples. He's talking about unintended consequences. You see, we tend to get this idea that what I do today is between me and maybe God, but it's mainly my deal. And Moses is saying it's not just your deal. There are ripples. There are generations to come that are going to be affected by the decisions that you're making. Each choice carries generational consequences. Each decision creates trade-offs between blessings and curses that ripple through our families and through our churches. And so as young people, I challenge you, having been a young person and still considering myself young and knowing our tendency as young people, when we decide to dabble in something out of curiosity, see what's there. I wonder what this is. And we dabble in sinful content, or we dabble in an ideology that we know is dangerous, or we put ourselves in risky circumstances and environments just to see what's there, and we're sure in our mind that we can handle it, we are tampering with consequential choices. Because often what happens is that decision to expose ourselves to the evil that's out there undermines our faith in ways that we did not see coming. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. Proverbs 14:12. Romans calls us to be wise unto that which is good and simple concerning evil. Because meddling in spiritual danger often further destabilizes a leaning life. Fifthly, choices are contagious. The original decision to build the Tower of Pisa on this soft ground set off or created a culture of just, let's make this work. A culture of, well, we are where we are, and we got to keep going. And so a succession of architects, some of them very famous and some of them very obscure, followed this same pattern. Instead of getting to the root of the issue and fixing the root, we'll just keep on building. We're just going to keep on trying to make it work. You see, a culture of compromise is contagious. Choices create cultures that pull others into the same drift. And so God is speaking to Israel in verse 19, both corporately and individually. And he's calling heaven and earth as witnesses against them. And I think it's an indication that their choice was not just affecting them personally, but it was affecting the larger community and the culture of those around them as well. You see, when one person chooses a culture of life, his obedience becomes a pattern that draws other people in. If he chooses death, that pattern spreads corrupting influences over those around him. And so, young people, I challenge you to choose life. Because if your friends see you compromising or engaging in a behavior that you once considered to be wrong, they're going to absorb that pattern. And they're going to assume that that must be how faith works. And the culture that you create and that they buy into can lead you both into spiritual default. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Proverbs 13, verse 20. You see, choices are contagious. One generation's compromise often becomes the next generation's norm. Sixthly, choices are inescapable. Choices consume resources that cannot be recovered. You see, once the heavy marble that they placed on the foundation of the Tower of Pisa had sunk into the clay, all the time and all the money and all the labor that they had put into it were gone. They couldn't undo that choice. And even centuries later, when modern architects stepped in and said, we have to do something to keep this tower from collapsing, they couldn't reverse those original choices. They couldn't make the tower straight. They could only stabilize it and keep it from collapsing completely. They actually removed soil on the side that was coming out of the ground and added counterweights to try to pull it back, but they never got it standing straightly again. And so, in essence, we're still reaping the effects of the original decisions of the builders of the Tower of Pisa. Choices are serious because some of the consequences for the choices that we make cannot be reversed. Verses 1 to 3 of Deuteronomy 30, God is saying, I know you're going to go into exile. I know you're going to go into captivity. There's already, I just know how it's going to go. And when you get into captivity and you call on me, I will restore you, but there are going to be the wasted years and the lost young people who never come along back with you. There are going to be consequences that you can't undo, and I'm begging you to choose life. Don't go there. That scattering of exile can't be completely undone. And so if we are spiritually off-center, we will suffer the effects of the sinful habits that we've established and the wasted time and the trust that we've broken. And some of those things just can't be undone. And we will discover that we can't fix a leaning spiritual life by simply trying harder to stand upright. We're going to have to remove some dirt. We're going to have to remove the sin. And we're going to have to apply some counterweights. We're going to have some honest conversations with solid mentors. And we're going to need the grace of God to bring us back and stabilize us. But we will bear the scars of the choices that we have made. We cannot erase the past, but we can still choose our response to it. Well, we can't avoid making choices. Life is really an endless series of choices, from the time the alarm rings in the morning, will I hit the snooze or will I get up? Will I brush my teeth or not? What food will I eat for breakfast? Will I send this message or will I not send it? Will I drive the speed limit or will I not drive it? Will I be honest or won't I be honest? Will I be committed to my work or won't I? How am I going to react in this circumstance? Will I speak a word for Christ? And then they become more consequential choices. Will I give my life to Christ? What job will I have? Who will I choose for a life companion? What church will I join? What standards will I have for myself and my family? I don't know how they determined this, but they estimate that we make 35,000 choices every day. And so if we are awake for 16 hours out of that day, it means that we make 2,000 choices an hour, or more than 33 a minute, or one choice every 1.8 seconds. And most of those are pretty minor, but there are choices that matter. All choices matter. Choices shape our lives. Someone said we make our choices and then our choices turn around and make us. Because we are the sum total of all the choices that we've made in our lives over the years. You know, when we're born, we look like our parents. But when we die, we look like our choices. And if those little choices have such big implications, then we need to sometimes make some pretty big changes in our thought patterns that are behind those choices. And so for the last part of the message, I would like to look at some paradigm shifts with big impacts on life choices. Paradigm shifts with big impacts on these little life choices. And you may ask, well, what is a paradigm shift? Well, a paradigm shift is simply a fundamental change in the way we understand or approach or practice something. It's changing the framework of how we think about something. So a paradigm shift is a change in our thought patterns. In this case, it's a change of our thought pattern that we need to diligently teach ourselves to think the way that God thinks about our choices. And we only do that with God's help, but we need to train ourselves to shift from how our flesh thinks about choices to how God thinks about choices. So what are some paradigm shifts that have big impacts on our little choices? Well, first of all, is the paradigm shift from full speed ahead to am I on the right road? You see, our flesh says full speed ahead. We live in a fast-paced society that tends to focus on moving from one thing to the next thing as quickly as possible. And society tends to value speed and equate speed with progress. And we're sort of hardwired to fall into that trap. Full speed ahead. And I believe that we need to shift our thinking to making haste slowly. Stopping and thinking, am I on the right road? What is my trajectory? And a trajectory is simply a path followed by a projectile or a flying object moving under a given force. And so spiritual trajectory is the way we are headed. And spiritual trajectory affects our eternal destiny. And so involved in this paradigm shift is slowing down, forcing ourselves to stop regularly and compare our direction of travel to the scripture. Matthew calls us to enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction. That's an easy target to hit, and it's an easy place for our trajectory to tend. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way, which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it, Matthew 7, 13 and 14. In other words, we have to make sure our trajectory is proper, or we will miss the straight gate and the narrow way. A traveler wrote of asking a young boy in England for directions, and the lad replied, well, you turn to the right, and you take the second street to the left, and that will bring you to a place where four streets meet. And then, sir, you'd better inquire again. And we face that in life. There are so many things in life that are uncertain that we do well, instead of boring full speed ahead, particularly as youth, to stop and ask again. In 2013, a very modern minesweeper in the U.S. Navy, the USS Guardian, ran aground on a reef in the Philippines because there was a digital mapping error of 8 nautical miles. And they were going full speed ahead relying on this digital map, not cross-referencing it with GPS, not checking it visually with lighthouses. And they ran this $277 million ship on the reef. A total loss, to say nothing of the damage to the protected coral reef. Shift from full speed ahead to am I on the right road? It's a paradigm shift that will protect you. Secondly, another paradigm shift is the shift from follow my heart to truth at all costs. Follow your heart is a buzzword in society. It's a buzz phrase in society. Society would teach us that we have this inner goodness that will intuitively help us to make the right decisions that will make us feel good in the long run. And following your heart is important, even if people around you think you're a little off balance. You follow your heart. I read a quote recently that said, "Follow your heart has ended more marriages, mutilated more bodies, destroyed more souls, and ended more lives than the devil could ever have imagined. It is hell's most effective slogan yet." And why is it so dangerous to follow your heart? Well, Jeremiah 17:9 tells us that the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who shall know it? I already quoted from Proverbs 14, "There's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." You see, our carnal heart is so deceptive that it can even take truth and twist it to justify our passions and our ambitions. And so we must shift from follow your heart, do what feels right to me right now, to buy the truth and sell it not at the expense of everything carnal. And this comes pretty practical sometimes as young people as we try to make decisions. Heard of one young couple who really wanted to buy this house that was financially on the edge. And they decided, well, we'll ask the Lord that if we're to have this house, he will have the builder accept half of the down payment that he's asking, and he will get us approved for the loan at the bank. Now, if those two things happen, then we'll know the Lord wants us to have the house. Well, those two things happened, and so they bought the house and proceeded on a lifetime of massive debt, which pulled their marriage apart. So did the Lord want them to have the house, or didn't he? Were they following their heart, or were they buying the truth at all costs? I'm not here tonight to give you an answer to that question, but I do know in my own life that there have been times where I've used circumstances to validate what my flesh really wanted to do. And that's scary ground to be on. Someone told of a Scottish woman whose business was traveling the Scottish countryside selling sewing novelties like buttons and thread, etc. And she had this habit of when she would come to a crossroad, she would throw a stick up into the air, and wherever it came down, that would determine whether she went left at the fork or right at the fork. One day, they saw her out at this one crossroads throwing the stick up in the air and throwing it again and throwing it again and throwing it again. They said, "Well, why do you keep throwing the stick?" Well, she said, "Because it keeps pointing to the left and I want to go right." We can't follow our heart. Many people know the will of God and refuse to do it because it's not their will. And that's the danger of following our heart. Thirdly, a paradigm shift that's important is the shift from it's no big deal to realizing that I really am the sum of all my choices. Someone said that little things are the hinges on which great results turn. Are little things a big deal or not? Well, Jesus said in Luke 16:10, "He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much." Solomon said in Song of Solomon, "Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vine." And the answer is simply, little things are a big deal because they make us who we are. In 1997, two men set off in a $1.5 million high-tech balloon in an attempt to circle the Earth for the first time in a balloon. And shortly after takeoff, they messaged an SOS. They were in trouble. Kerosene was streaming out of both tanks, and they couldn't stop it. They ended up ditching this $1.5 million balloon in the Mediterranean. It was a total loss. They traced the cause to a radiator hose clamp costing $1.16. Do little things matter or don't they? Another paradigm shift is the shift from asking what is wrong with it to asking what is right with it. I believe one of the things that Satan would trap us into doing is going through life without reckoning with how lethal little sins are to our walk with Christ. I heard a brother say, within the last 2 years, and I think he's right, many people will miss Christ's return because they are too busy figuring out what they can get by with. And so instead of asking, well, what's wrong with it? What's the big deal? We need to shift our thinking to, is this going to draw me closer to Christ or is it going to draw me away from Christ? We tend to downplay sins. We're not lying. We're just exaggerating. We don't have evil thoughts. We just daydream. We're not proud. We're just confident. Little sin is an oxymoron. Else, why would the scripture tell us to abstain from all appearance of evil? And why would Proverbs tell us that only fools make a mock at sin? Have you ever heard the expression flotsam and jetsam? If there's a shipwreck, they'll say, oh, there was a lot of flotsam and jetsam, a lot of debris. Well, the flotsam is what's left after the ship goes down. The jetsam is actually what they threw overboard ahead of time trying to keep the ship from going down. And so there can be jetsam without a shipwreck. And I would call us tonight that if our ship is in trouble, we throw overboard anything that is hindering us. We eject from our lives. We jettison the sin which does so easily beset us and the weights. Anything that we prefer to hang on to because we want it in our flesh, but could cause us a spiritual disaster. Another paradigm shift is the shift from choosing good to choosing best. You see, there are choices in life that aren't really between good and evil. They're just between what is okay and what is better or what is best. And so the question that I ask myself and I ask each of you tonight is, am I sold out for God and will do whatever it takes to serve him faithfully, or am I trying to just do enough to slide into heaven? Someone said that we should always pause and evaluate our decisions using the 10-10-10 rule. How I feel about it 10 minutes from now, how I feel about it 10 months from now, how I feel about it 10 years from now. And I think as Christians, we should add another 10. How will I feel about it 10 generations from now? Or what effect will it have 10 generations from now if the world stands? And so as youth, I challenge us to go to our parents, go to a counselor, find a mature Christian, read the Bible, especially the book of Proverbs. It's a great source of counsel, and don't just cut and pick what confirms what you want to do. Take it as a package and evaluate it all together. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. Pray through it. Put your choices in God's hands and have others pray too, and choose the high road. Don't shoot for the minimum. Shoot for the high road. John Oxenham wrote this, "To every man there openeth a way and ways and a way, and some men climb the highway and some men grope below. And in between, on misty flats, the rest drift to and fro. And to every man there openeth a highway and a low, and every man decideth which way his soul shall go." Choose life. Choose the highway. Another paradigm shift is the shift from thinking my life is boring to realizing that every moment I am choosing my eternal destiny. You know, growth and purpose in life are not going to happen by default. They require intentional choices for God. Each choice we make is a seed we sow, and the fruit that we reap from it will be according to the seed we sow, either for life or for death. And so moment by moment, as we go through our day, we're choosing the way of life or choosing the way of death. We can't choose one in between. It's one or the other. And so every moment of every day is spiritually significant. We don't do spiritual on Sunday and then coast through the rest of our week. It is impossible. It's as simple as, will I get up in the morning in time for my devotions or will I not? You know, each of those decisions has a consequence spiritually. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever I sow, I will reap. You've heard of exponential growth. Well, stop and think about how it works. If I start with one penny today, and tomorrow I double it, and I have two, and the day after that I double it again, and I have four. If I double it every day for 24 days, I will have more than $80,000 at the end of 24 days. That's exponential growth, and that's exactly what happens with small decisions that seem to have no impact at the beginning. They compound exponentially and shape our character and our destiny. Another paradigm shift is the shift from what feels good now to what matters eternally. One of the most difficult things for us as humans, and especially as young people, is to move past the immediate gratification. I want it now, get it for me, for it pleaseth me well. To move past that immediate gratification and consider the eternal weight of our actions. Because there are unintended costs in our decisions and even in our careless habits, our thoughtless habits. Ephesians 5 tells us to walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Ecclesiastes calls us to remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. Why? The end of the chapter says, God will bring every work into judgment. You see, what I do now, every piece of it has eternal weight. It mattered to Daniel what was on his dinner plate because he had a purpose of heart. And he saw the eternal end of it. The early church wrestled with this as they came out of paganism, and they were often, as craftsmen, faced with, will I do work for the pagans, or will I give up that work because of my faith? Often came in the shape of, will I work for a pagan temple? Will I help construct a pagan temple? And the story's told that a Christian stonemason came to Tertullian, the early church father, and said, can I build this pagan temple or shouldn't I? And Tertullian left him talk, and he was sort of theorizing, talking to himself, and he said, what can I do? I must live. And Tertullian shot back, must you? I read of a mother whose young son was grabbed by a crocodile, or an alligator, one of the two. We'll call it an alligator. The alligator grabbed the boy's legs and pulled. The mom grabbed his arms and pulled, and engaged in a literal tug of war to try to save her son from the alligator. And finally, she prevailed, and the alligator let go of the boy. Well, the boy was less proud of the scars on his legs from the alligator teeth. Then he was proud of the scars on his arms where his mother's fingernails dug in. And he would show people those scars and say, I have them because my mom wouldn't let go. His mom was looking at eternity. And I just say to young people, to all of us, be thankful for those who love you enough to hang on and pull you away from the world and snatch you from hellfire. The last paradigm shift I have is the shift from thinking nobody even knows or cares what I do to realizing that God rewards even a cup of cold water. You know, sometimes we're tempted to think, what I'm doing isn't glamorous, I'm just in this little corner, nobody even sees if I do what is right. And we get discouraged and think that our small choices for righteousness don't matter. Someone has said it this way, God is great in the great things, but he is very great in the little things. And he tells us, Jesus tells us in Matthew 10, whosoever shall give a cup, give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. It's like the old man who was walking the beach and he saw a young boy running down the beach. The tide had brought in a lot of starfish and left them stranded on the beach. And if the sun came up and dried out the starfish, they would die. And so this young boy was running down the beach, picking up starfish and throwing them back into the water. And the old man said, "Well, son, why are you bothering? You know, you can't make a difference on all these thousands of starfish that have washed up on the beach." The young boy didn't even stop. He picked up another one. He threw it back. He said, "I made a difference to that one." God is not unfaithful to forget your labor of love. Well, the Tower of Pisa didn't become the Leaning Tower of Pisa after some sudden catastrophic lurch. It began with very small, unnoticed changes that build on each other. And it's the same way that we can drift away from God through a series of little decisions that seem harmless at the time but carry eternal weight. And so I ask myself and I ask each of you here tonight, if all of my little choices from today were stacked one on top of another, if they were building blocks and I set them up here tonight on the platform, would they form a tower that leans toward the world, or would they form a tower that points straight to the Lord Jesus Christ? I believe one of the greatest paradigm shifts that we can have is becoming people who see eternity in every moment. The text message that we send or we don't send, the friend we refuse to confront about their sin, or we do confront them, the sin we call just a habit. Each of those small decisions either strengthens our trajectory toward life or pushes us toward spiritual collapse. And I pray that God will help each of us to have the purpose of heart to choose life. Let's kneel for prayer.